Welcome to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. Utah's landscape tells a story of ancient lakes, shifting climates, and geologic forces that have shaped the West over thousands of years. Dr. Holly Godsey, a geologist and professor at the University of Utah, brings that story to life through her research on Lake Bonneville and the Great Basin.
But Holly's impact goes far beyond research. Holly's deeply committed to science education, developing programs that help teachers get students out into the field to experience Utah's geology firsthand, while also connecting scientists, educators, and lifelong learners through initiatives like the University of Utah's Go Learn program. She joins us today to explore the fascinating geologic history beneath our feet and why getting outside might be the best classroom of all. Holly, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a really good place to start. I think I mentioned this to you before we went on air that spring is here, whether we like it or not. We usually do like it, but this year it's a little different, isn't it? Lots of people are heading down south, and I feel like every year when I head down south in the spring, I am confronted with, now, what were those layers of sandstone, and why can't I remember them, and if they come from the Jurassic or the Triassic period, and all of this. So we thought you would be a really good person to talk to. So Holly, why don't we start with how you have helped young people get outside and learn this stuff, because we all know we can learn from our kids too.
So I think the most important thing when trying to get students of any age excited about science and rocks in particular is to really help them understand that even if they don't remember the names of the different sandstones or whatnot, they have some really good observational skills and they can just look at the rocks and figure some things out. I love being able to help people see that just by noticing things that they notice in every day, like how gravity works, that they can actually figure out how a rock was formed. Maybe they won't know the age of it or the name of it, but they can tell something about how that particular layer was deposited over time and see all the changes in the rocks. I think we are so lucky in Utah just to have the most spectacular geology, definitely in the country, perhaps even in the world, where we have such a diversity of mountains and canyons. And so for folks heading down to southern Utah, you know, really take advantage of the fact that you can see all those layers and all of those, every change that you see in a color or a grain size or a bed really means something.
Yeah, that is so great to sharpen your observational skills. And I think if we all did that, you know, about all kinds of things, sharpening our observation skills, we'd be a lot better off and we'd be a lot more interested in things like geology. I mean, I go back to my eighth grade geology class and the teacher brought in rocks. You know, it just didn't turn me on to geology, I have to say. But so you've kind of helped initiate this program where you at the University of Utah are with a group that's teaching teachers how to get the kids out. What else do you impart in terms of geology and Southern Utah with them that really keeps their interest?
So I'm so glad that you brought up the fact that you maybe weren't interested in rocks when you were in middle school, because I was the same way. And it wasn't until I started realizing how much information was coded within the rock itself that I truly started to become interested. You know, a lot of times our science is taught sort of as a memorization, you know, remember the names of these types of rocks and remember these different things, as opposed to a process of really just, you know, trying to figure out what would cause the deposition of a big boulder versus a sand grain or something like that. So when I take teachers out into the field, I try to get them to really use all the information that they already have at hand and really try not to have them rely on memory. So we inevitably have some teachers that have had a lot of geology courses and they're trying to remember the time scale and all those things. And I really like to kind of probe them to say, you know, just just look, just make some observations, tell me what you see, and let's go from there. And so I think that brings people of all backgrounds to the same spot and really helps get them interested and excited in realizing that they all have these skills to be able to do this.
I mentioned in my intro, Holly, that you bring research to life through your trips to Lake Bonneville and the Great Basin. And for listeners who may not actually be familiar with this, what was Lake Bonneville and maybe how does it compare to today's Great Salt Lake?
So for folks that have lived in Utah, you may have heard about Lake Bonneville, but a lot of people don't know a lot about it. Okay, so Lake Bonneville was a really large lake. So think Lake Michigan, like the size of Lake Michigan, that existed here in the Bonneville Basin about 20,000 years ago. At that time, the climate was much wetter and colder than it is today. And so if you think about it, this is about the time of what we consider the last ice age. And so conditions were very different. This is a time of saber-toothed cats, you know, woolly mammoths, walking along the shorelines, all of that. So it's a very different environment than what we have today. But because it was wetter and colder, the lake started to rise, and it rose quite a bit until it reached sort of the rim of the basin. And some people like to think of this as like a bathtub, the edge of a bathtub. And once it reached the edge of the bathtub, it started spilling over the side. At that point, it became what's called an open basin lake. Now, this is important because prior to that, any water that fell into the lake, the only way out was through evaporation. There was no rivers running out of the lake. It was what we call closed basin. But once it reached that edge of the bathtub, it started flowing over into the Columbia River drainage. But here's where things get really interesting. So the lake sits there at that level for quite some time. And then for reasons we don't fully understand, all of this, the dirt and the gravel that was kind of holding up the lake, sort of a natural dam, ended up collapsing. And this natural dam just broke, and all of this water rushed out of the lake and drained the lake. It dropped over 100 meters almost instantaneously, at least geologically speaking. So that's about like a year's time is what we're talking about. And this is an event called the Bonneville Flood. And it's pretty unique in geologic history. There are times when other glacial-aged lakes have, like an ice dam is broken or other reasons that they have flooded. But this one was actually sediments that, whether either they were saturated, maybe there was an earthquake, something happened that just caused them to break. So after the lake kind of dropped down to this restabilized a new bathtub threshold, much lower, sat there for a while, and then climate dried up again, or warmed. We're not sure if it was drying or warming or both. And so that caused the lake to drop below that threshold, and the lake became closed again. It's been like that ever since, and until it dropped all the way down to the level of modern-day Great Salt Lake. So for my research, the part I find most interesting is the time when the lake is actually a closed basin, when it's not overflowing at those thresholds, because we can tell what's happening with the climate with every little oscillation of the lake when it's below those thresholds, simply because all the water is stuck in the lake unless it's evaporated. So it's a really great opportunity to look at the different shorelines that form when the lake is oscillating and create a model of how climate was oscillating in the past 15,000 years.
Well, it kind of sounds like the bathtub overflowed.
It did. It overflowed for a while. And while it was overflowing, that's when our climate was much different than it is today. And so we're really interested in that change from the ice age or the last ice age to what it looks like now, because that's a big change in climate. So going from something that would, a climate that would maintain a lake at that level to where modern day Great Salt Lake shows a considerable amount of change in a relatively short period of time.
So it sounds like studying an ancient lake like Bonneville kind of helps us better understand current and future water challenges in America in some way, I would imagine. I know that we're all facing pressures. I know the Great Salt Lake, we talk about how it's shrinking or evaporating and the dangers of that. And Also, you know, the Colorado River, we have shortages and pressures that are on our water system here. How does studying something like Lake Bonneville affect or maybe even give us hope for future?
That's a really great question. So that's really the point of this research is to be able to understand how climate changes on its own, how quickly, how often, prior to humans adding CO2 into the atmosphere post-industrial revolution. And so if we can get a really detailed record of climate, so the lake dropping up and down, telling us if the climate's getting warmer or colder or wetter or drier, we can tell what is normal for our area and then make predictions about what the lake should be doing moving towards the future. If we see deviations from that, there's a good chance that it might be caused by the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from the burning of fossil fuels.
So interesting. You know, Great Salt Lake now is on everyone's mind because its levels are going so low and exposing some toxic dust. And we've talked recently to one of your colleagues in the geology department at the University of Utah, William Johnson, who talks about the aquifers, these possible freshwater aquifers under Great Salt Lake. Holly, before we move on, I wanted to ask you about, you know, when you're down in the Salt Lake Valley, you can look up on the east bench and you can see where one of the levels was of Lake Bonneville. Obviously, I guess maybe that was in one of its bathtub phases. But if for people who have never, you know, looked at this before, maybe you're new to the area, where is the best place to view the bathtub rings on the east bench?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. A lot of those bathtub rings have been built over.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I would say that the University of Utah is built on one of those big bathtub rings. It's called the Provo Shoreline. And so if you kind of take a look at it and kind of try to ignore the buildings, you can actually see the presence of a large shoreline. And then directly above that, and right under the big U on the mountain, is the Bonneville shoreline, which is the highest shoreline when the lake was right before the Bonneville flood happened. You can see that there as well. Obviously, if you go to places that don't have as much development, as much housing and gravel pits and so forth, you'll be able to see better examples of those shorelines in different places.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Well, I wanted to move on to this great program that you are connected with, which doesn't have much at all to do with Lake Bonneville. It does have to do with science education, and it's a Go Learn program at the University of Utah. You specifically go with groups to Iceland and New Zealand, is that right? To look at geology and different things. Tell us a little bit about the program.
Yes, so the Go Learn program at the University of Utah is a terrific program. It's a program for anybody of any age who wants to travel with a faculty member that knows a little bit about the area that they're traveling to. So it's about educational travel. And so I started leading field trips to Iceland, about 10 years ago now. So I've led, this will be my eighth trip, I guess, coming up this summer. And we just take folks out to these beautiful places. We talk about the geology. We talk about the natural history. We learn about all kinds of things. And we don't just limit it to whatever the theme of the trip is. So, for example, even on this geology trip, we visit a lot of cultural sites, some archaeological sites. We go to museums and we eat really well. And so they're just amazing trips with people who are curious and interested and just want to learn about the world. I should mention that Go Learn does all kinds of trips, so not just geology trips. They do trips that are based on literature and politics and history and all kinds of things. And so they have a whole slew of options for these educational travel trips.
I've been to Iceland, and I have to say that there are parts of it that don't even look like you're on Earth anymore. The moonscape is the only thing I can think of when we are really out in some of this rugged terrain, particularly at the base of the glaciers, where nature has done its carving job, so to speak. I'm curious, though, are there other places maybe a little closer to home in North America that inspire such changes as we're talking about, whether it's in Iceland or even in the Bonneville Basin or the Bonneville Flats?
I'm glad that you mentioned Iceland, and it's wonderful that you've been there. I think that it is such a magical landscape and unlike any place on Earth. I would say Utah can very much be like that as well. For people who have never seen a desert landscape, we've got both the West Desert, which is just remarkably beautiful in its sort of barrenness, so to speak, and its uniqueness with the salt flats and the ranges that rise up there. And then we've got the Southern Utah Red Rock Desert, which we were talking about earlier. Again, having this unique exposure of all these rocks that cover hundreds of millions of years of Earth history. And so, you know, again, we're in a really great spot. There are other great spots on the planet, but we're in probably one of the best for the diversity.
So I'm just curious, what does a typical day on your field trip look like?
Wow, so we're busy, I will say that. So we will usually hit the trail, so to speak, pretty early in the morning, and we'll go out and visit. With Iceland in particular, everything's kind of spread out. And so you do spend some time on the bus driving around and visiting different geological features, lots of waterfalls, beautiful canyons, kind of hidden groves. We even spend time in some of the hot springs, so the natural hot springs, but some of the not natural hot springs as well that are kind of become famous for Iceland, like the Blue Lagoon. But, you know, we also get to visit museums, and we visit, Viking longhouses, and we meet with locals, and we have full days. So if you go to Iceland in the summer, the sun is up for quite some time. And so it really is only dark for maybe 4 hours a day. So we take advantage of those long days. It's a full itinerary for sure. And so we also try to get some hikes in, and a lot of it depends on the people who are on the trip. You know, I try to give them a couple of options if they want to hike up a mountain or just stroll over to the visitor center at a national park or walk along the side of a glacier. We try to make everybody happy on those trips.
It sounds like a marvelous trip, and it is already sold out for this summer. But if people are interested in, well, first of all, you can just Google University of Utah Go Learn program, and you will see all these trips to all over the world, and including right here in our own wonderful state. When does the Iceland trip open up for registration? Because it sounds like it must sell out right away.
Yes, the Iceland trip is definitely a popular one. Gosh, I don't know if I can answer your question, but I do know that if you're interested in the trip, you can click the link on the website that says, join the interest list, and then they will notify you that the trip is available for registration. And so we have filled the trip over the last several years because it is a popular destination. But there's always a chance that, there might be some extra openings. You never know. So right. Definitely worth filling out that join the interest list link.
Is this a fundraiser for the various departments at the University of Utah, or is it, I looked at the price and it's not cheap.
So the Go Learn program is part of continuing education at the University of Utah. And so its goal is really to bring knowledge to lifelong learners. It is not a fundraiser. The price for the Iceland trip is a little bit higher than a lot of the trips that you'll see on the Go Learn website, simply because traveling to Iceland is a little bit more expensive in terms of hotels, food expenses, all of that.
Good. Well, it's wonderful when a great institution like the University of Utah, and it's right here in our backyard, or it's probably better said in our front yard, along the Wasatch Front, you know, has such a robust continuing education program. It's really wonderful. So we've
been talking about the basin, and we've been talking about Bonneville and Iceland. I would love to know just a little bit more about what you would expect the ecosystems to have been like. Either is there any kind of way to compare what's going on in Utah and what you've observed in Iceland? Are there any kind of lessons learned for the ecosystems between those two very, very different geological areas?
There is actually a great connection between this volcano that erupted. There's a great connection between this volcano that erupted in Lake Bonneville right before it hit its highest level and volcanoes that have erupted in Iceland in the last 100 years or so. And so people are studying the composition of the lava that came out of these volcanoes and making comparisons across the two, because they're very similar in a number of ways. And so it can teach us not so much about the ecosystem, but about the interior of the earth.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I know. And I wish I could remember the details better, because it's actually another colleague of mine that has done this, her name is Marie Jackson. She has done some work on the eruption of Surtsey, which was a volcanic island that basically appeared in the ocean near Iceland in 1967, and has been studying that ever since. And the really interesting thing about that island is that they don't allow people on it unless you're a researcher, because they don't want to contaminate it with anything on our boots or anything that might kind of degrade the natural soils that are being formed there. And they're trying to study how life colonizes land for the first time. And so it's really interesting. Sadly, not that related to my work.
That's really interesting. And I had no idea that Lake Bonneville had a volcano in it. Where is that in modern day Salt Lake Valley?
Oh, so that's a great question. So the Lake Bonneville actually had a volcanic eruption that occurred about 15,000 years ago. And the eruption came out of an event called Pahvant Butte. So it's a little bit south of Delta, Utah. So not in the Salt Lake Valley, it's quite some distance away. And when this volcano erupted, it put this big ash cloud into the atmosphere. And the ash was blown sort of around the whole region. And we can find that ash in the sediments. And if we can locate that ash, we can get a radiometric date on the age of the eruption, and then also use that to constrain the age of the sediments of the lake as well. Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's really cool, actually. The Pahvant Butte ash is really cool, and people didn't even know that it existed.
So you've talked about Iceland, and you also help with the New Zealand trip. What's that about?
Yeah, so the New Zealand trip is a brand new offering by Go Learn, and I am planning that trip for February of 2027. That will be our first Go Learn trip to New Zealand. And New Zealand is a remarkable place. It's got so many unique features, geologically speaking, in a relatively small area, much like Utah, but very different in the sense that there are active glaciers in New Zealand. There's also a tropical rainforest, beautiful rugged beaches, and, you know, coastal turquoise waters. And so we are going to be talking about the geology, but also the rest of the natural history of New Zealand. And so New Zealand has a unique flora and fauna because it broke off from Australia and isolated all of these plants and animals from mainland. And so they've developed this whole unique ecosystem, and we'll be exploring some of those plants and animals while we're there as well.
Dr. Holly Godsey is a geologist and professor at the University of Utah, and I also want her job. I want your job.
Traveling. I do love my job.
Traveling to New Zealand. That sounds great. She is associated with the University of Utah's Go Learn program. Holly, thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.